This is Nightlife
with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
News breakdown time. Federal Parliament well into its second long week of the current session. It seems some MPs were not keen to be in the House yesterday afternoon. Indeed, barrelling parliamentary staff out of the way after Speaker Milton Dick called for a vote on a government bill on income management policies. This is what happened yesterday afternoon.
Lock the doors. Lock the doors immediately. No, lock the doors. Those members will need to return to the chamber immediately.
The result of the rush to the doors was an injury to a female House attendant. This is the Speaker of the House, Milton Dick, today.
I want to address a very serious and grave incident that occurred during a division yesterday afternoon. I thank the Leader of the House for raising this incident with me at the time. After the bells had been rung, I ordered that the doors be locked. After I gave this order, I'm aware that a number of members exited the chamber while one of the attendants was attempting to close and lock the door to the opposition lobby as directed. As all members are aware, under Standing Order 129, after the Speaker orders the doors to be locked, no member may enter or leave the chamber until after the division. The most serious aspect of this incident is that members physically pushed their way past the attendant to get out of the chamber, resulting in them getting hit in the doorframe and hurting their arm. I'm particularly disgusted by this behaviour and I will not tolerate it.
That's the Speaker of the House, Milton Dick. Well, to tell us more and to discuss the appointment of the first head of the new National Anti-Corruption Commission and continuing suggestions that the Voice referendum will divide Australians, with us again, Amy Romikas, Guardian Australia's political reporter. Amy, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Hey, you were doing the Guardian's live blog when this incident happened. What was the rush? Did someone get caught short? There were seven coalition MPs bolting for the door. Were they anxious to get on the last at Randwick or something? Or what was going on?
Nothing so exciting in Canberra. No, I don't think there was actually any reason for it. I mean, in the House, it doesn't matter what the opposition does, really, because the government has the numbers. So if the government wants something to pass, it's going to pass regardless of what the opposition does. I think that they just wanted to go and do something else, with their time, because MPs often have a lot of demands on their time, and they didn't make it out of the chamber in time. But rushing out like that, which is, you know, basically, like juveniles running out of like the school door.
Yeah.
I don't think that really impressed anyone. There was a little bit of a kerfuffle, as you played for your audience there, where Milton Dick called them back, and then it emerged that an attendant had been injured when her arm got jammed between one of the members and the door. That's just not on. I mean, like, it's a workplace. Just walk out of the door like a normal person. It is not that difficult. And if you don't want to vote in the division, you can sit to the side. There are options for you. Or you can go and sit with the rest of your colleagues, whichever way they are voting for. There was no reason for it. We've seen an increasing amount of tension and shenanigans in the chamber over the last couple of months. And I think that this was the culmination of it. And I've rarely heard Milton Dick actually sound so serious. So I think that this is something that he's going to be keeping an eye on. And I think hopefully this is going to calm down some of the bad behaviour we've been seeing in the House.
There was some mea culpas after the incident too. Have a listen to this.
I'm now going to give indulgence to members who left the chamber following my order to lock the doors to apologise to the House for their actions.
Speaker, I left the House, as you were saying, close the doors, and I apologise for my conduct.
I apologise to the House Speaker.
I too unreservedly apologise to the House.
I apologise to the House and the Speaker for seeking to leave after the Speaker had ordered that the doors be closed.
I unreservedly apologise to you and to the House.
I also apologise unreservedly to you and the House for attempting to leave after the doors were to be locked.
Mr Speaker, I unreservedly apologise to the House and yourself for leaving after your direction yesterday. I also apologise to the staff if they were involved in this. Our staff here in the chamber do an incredible job, and one of them is not crowd control.
Gee, it really sounds like kids being brought up before the principal for nicking stuff from the school tuck shop, doesn't it? Or you know, getting jumping out of school early and making a sprint for the buses before the rest of the final assembly's been left. I mean, those involved weren't parliamentary novices. The voices you heard there, you might have recognised Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor. There was Shadow Defence Minister Andrew Hastie, Shadow Immigration Minister Dan Tehan, the Shadow Climate Change and Energy Minister Ted O'Brien, even a former Deputy Speaker, Lou O'Brien, and Zoe McKenzie and Sam Birrell backbenchers. I mean, frankly, they ought have known better. But I suspect most people listening to this would think, well, yeah, that'd be pretty par for the course for behaviour in Parliament House, would it? I mean, you're an observer of it. What's it like?
I am. Look, I mean, like, it is a little ridiculous at times. The chamber is meant to be combative. That's what it's meant to be. But people sometimes take that energy a bit too far. And I think that's what we saw. I mean, the rules are the rules, that when the speaker says lock the doors, it doesn't matter if the doors are actually physically locked or not. That's it. You're in the chamber or you're out of the chamber. Occasionally we see like MPs try to push that. So they will try and push past the attendants to get in or out, depending on, you know, which way that they're voting. But this was ridiculous. This was like a rush of people through a narrow space and somebody got hurt. And honestly, it's just like, they're grown-ups. They get paid a lot of money. They just need to maybe just settle down, you know. I think most people just want their parliamentarians to settle down and do their job.
Hear, hear to that, Amy. Hear, hear to that. Look, on to more serious matters. The New South Wales Court of Appeal judge and former war crimes investigator Paul Brereton is to become the first head of the country's independent National Anti-Corruption Commission. This had been pretty much telegraphed in advance, but the commission will deliver on Labor's pre-election promise, which came in the wake of the former Liberal government's failure to establish a corruption watchdog, despite overwhelming support. So this is a very important body. Well, it's set to be an important body. Justice Brereton is 65. He was also a former Army Major General. That's a 5-year appointment. What's the response been to the selection?
Well, the response has been, you know, pretty much across the board, bipartisanly, quite good to this. I don't think that there's anyone raising any concerns about Justice Brereton and his suitability for this role. There's also a parliamentary oversight committee which approved this before Mark Dreyfus made the announcement. And there are members from the crossbench as well as the opposition on that parliament oversight committee, so that everyone, you know, pretty much got a say into it. But I think it's going to be interesting, because now it's done. The commission is there. The commissioner is setting it up, and it'll be running in the second half of the year. It's now out of government's hand. It's out of politicians' hands now. And the commissioner is the one who's going to be deciding what that commission looks into, how retrospective it is, whether hearings are going to be public or not. There's a lot of power that Justice Brereton holds there. And I think it's going to be really interesting as the Parliament adapts to having a National Anti-Corruption Commission, because this is not something that they've had to deal with before. And that is going to be very, very interesting, I think.
Guardian Australia's political reporter Amy Remikas with us on Nightlife News Breakdown. Gee, it would be a fascinating job, though, wouldn't it? I mean, he might be, Justice Brereton might be 65 and in some people's eyes at the end of his career, not so. But he gets the chance to set the commission up from scratch. It'll be an enormous job.
Yeah, it will be. It's going to be huge.
Because after all, it's the flavour and character of it will be his doing. Now, he's unlikely to be easily intimidated or daunted, you'd think, considering his background, is he?
Well, no, and I think somebody who investigated alleged war crimes by Australian soldiers is probably up to, you know, a tough challenge. I think that he's going to be more than apt for the job. But you're right, he is going to shape it, and that's going to be interesting in itself, because there are a lot of people who wanted this anti-corruption commission. And by people, I mean voters. There are a lot of people who have been calling for this for decades. So now they have it. but it's in his hands. He's in the commission's hands. So it's going to be having to live up to a lot of expectations, I think. And, you know, he may not decide to look into some of the issues that people would have expected him to, some of the issues that we saw raised during the former government, for example. I'm not sure what his parameters are going to be and what he's going to look at. He'll be taking referrals from the government, from the public service, from the public itself. But it is going to be interesting when he decides this is what the commission is going to look at first. I think that's something that everybody is going to be waiting on.
Yeah, I reckon. This is Attorney General Mark Dreyfus commenting on the judge's suitability today.
Justice Brereton has a wealth of experience leading complex and sensitive investigations, including as Assistant Inspector General of the Australian Defence Force when he delivered the Afghanistan Inquiry Report.
Yes, indeed. There were two deputies appointed today, too. Chief Executive of AUSTRAC, Nicole Rose, and the Disability Discrimination Commissioner of the Human Rights Commission, Dr. Ben Gauntlett, have been given the two positions as deputy commissioners on five-year terms. Gee, there'll be a lot expected of them, won't there? And of Justice Brereton, too.
Yeah, there is. And I think understandably a lot expected of them because it is an important part of the democracy that you have faith in it. And to have faith in it, you need to make sure that people who have done alleged wrongdoing are going to be held to account and that's going to be properly investigated. So you need serious people to do a serious job. This isn't something that you can just appoint political lackeys to or jobs for the boys or, you know, that sort of thing. This is something that is going to be a foundation of Australia's democracy and a tenet of our faith in that democracy. And so it has to be taken seriously. And I think this first commission and the commissioner does prove that there are a lot of people who know that there is quite a lot riding on this and they don't want to squib that chance.
No, indeed. All right, to The Voice, and also today in Parliament, the Prime Minister and Mr. Albanese accusing politicians and sections of the media of running a scare campaign over The Voice to Parliament, with the Coalition continuing their line of demanding further details. Speaking in Parliament House this morning, the Prime Minister said Voice opponents were asking about every nuance of how the body would work in an attempt to undermine the reference. He also looked to put some historical context into arguments that Coalition concerns about the working and wording of the referendum could open the door to parliamentary decisions being challenged in the courts. He said, I've seen these kinds of arguments before.
Wick, Mabo, the apology. I sat in that parliament throughout the entire Howard government years, being told that if we had an apology, it would divide the nation. Does anyone think that the apology divided the nation now?
Yeah. When are we likely to see a coalition line on this, position on this, Amy? Or will there ever be one?
Look, I mean, the parliament will see some legislation from the government on the voice, on the wording of the voice and the principles that Anthony Albanese laid out last week. Tomorrow, that legislation goes into the parliament. Then it goes to a committee where the committee will look at it and add in whether there needs to be any amendments to the wording or anything included in the legislation. Then that gets voted on. And I think that'll be the time when we hear an actual line from the Liberal Party. The Nationals, of course, have already come out and said, no, we do not support this. But I think we can all probably see that the Liberal Party has been campaigning on a soft no since The Voice became prominent with this government. And I don't see any indication that they're going to shift from the no vote. I think it's pretty much decided. It's just at the moment, Peter Dutton and the opposition are keeping their cards a little bit closer to their chest. But I think anyone who's pretty good at reading poker faces knows which way the Liberal Party is going on this.
That's right. Mr Dutton will have to come out at some point and say, well, look, you know, I'm going to vote yes or no.
He will.
He can't keep his cards close to his chest.
No, he doesn't. But we're not going to see this referendum until the second half of the year. He does have a little bit of time. And I think the committee process looking at the wording of the referendum will probably give that to him. But in the meantime, we're going to be hearing a lot of questions and criticisms against The Voice thrown up as just asking for detail. Because this argument that we're currently seeing playing out in the parliament, that people may challenge it in the court, is kind of ridiculous because people can challenge whatever they want in the
court. Yeah, I mean, who cares? Who cares?
Cannot stop people from bringing court cases or litigating if they feel a right or a need to do that. The important thing is whether or not those cases would have merit or whether there is some sort of constitutional flaw in what we're talking about, which would give those cases life. And the overwhelming legal opinion is that the voice and the principles, as have been laid out, don't do that, that they work with the Constitution, that it's not going to see the Constitution turned on its head or the High Court have to come down with a bunch of different rulings. You can't stop people going to court, but that doesn't mean that the court is going to suddenly just go, oh my goodness, you're right, throw the whole Parliament out.
No, no. Well, the government passed bills and they become acts every day where people take litigate the results and consequences of those bills. I mean, that just is part of normal life, you would have
thought.
Kind
of the Parliament's job.
Yes, exactly.
Parliament will do as Parliament will, and there's nothing in the voice that's going to stop the Parliament from doing what it will. Mm. But it does remind me of some old footage I saw of John Howard around the time of the Mabo and Wick decision, where they were talking about native title, and he held up a map showing that 98% of Australia was covered by this native title decision, which was going to open up 98% of Australia, you know, to court challenges over native title. We have not seen that. And I think anyone listening should maybe just apply a little bit of critical thought to this question of how many times we've been warned that we're about to see a complete turnabout in Australia's laws because of something that we're doing for Indigenous Australians, and how often that is actually played out in reality.
Just before we go, Amy, there was, news of the passing of two Hawke government Labor ministers. These would have been before your time, well before your time, but former Labor Treasurer John Kerrin and former Labor Minister Stuart West, Mr. Albanese paying tribute to Mr. Kerrin, who was former Labor Treasurer and former Labor Minister Stuart West. Mr. West elected as the Illawarra MP for Cunningham in 1977. And John Kerrin remembered by Monash MP Russell Broadbent as a favourite of the House after he died. He was 85. More ghosts, I suppose, of Parliament's passing.
There is, and we're going to hear some condolence motions for both of those former ministers in the Parliament very soon, where I'm sure every MP who wishes to speak will. But it is a reminder of, you know, the greats who have gone before, and I think it does give every minister and MP in that place a little bit of reflection every time that they hear of a passing, regardless of what side of politics they sat on.
Indeed. Amy, always good to talk. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.